Hello there, welcome to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. As I come down from Oberon to Bathurst, and for everyone moving in and around the city, the Macquarie River is an undeniable feature of the Bathurst landscape. Many pressures on the river, from pre-colonial days to urbanisation, drought and climate change, have had a significant effect on the state of the river now. Today we'll hear from one of the Wiradjuri elders here in Bathurst, and also from a dedicated ecologist about how the river has changed and ways that the river could be managed. Now, my guest in today's program is Dinawan. Dinawan is a Wiradjuri elder here in the Bathurst Plains. Dinawan, thank you very much for joining the program today.
Thank you for inviting me on.
Now, you're going to talk to us about the river as it runs from its starting point through to where it leaves Wiradjuri country. First of all, what's the Wiradjuri name for the river?
The Wiradjuri name is Wambool, which means winding and meandering river. And so, and we know that that name's been around for at least 8,000 years because I was shown a digital image by a geologist one time of how the river flowed when it came into the Bathurst Plains area, and it was winding and meandering. So we know that that name's been there for a long, long time, and that that's how the river's been flowing too.
Where does the river start?
The river originally starts for us up in near Oberon, which is the Fish River, starting from up there. So the Fish River is part of, for us, is the Wambool, and that, and it flows all the way down from the mountains up there and out to the plains into towards Bathurst and out towards Narromine, which is the last place within Wiradjuri country before it flows into other people's country out that way, nation group.
Wasn't there some Wiradjuri artwork up around that area?
Yeah, so some of the places along there are very significant, and when they built the dam way back in the 1940s, I think it was, there were some art sites there that had hand stenciling on some rocks, which is all granite. So granite is probably not one of the rocks that they did a lot of artwork on, but when they did it, it was a very significant place. So when they did it there, there was a lot of significance to that with the hand stenciling and other motifs that would have been on it to signify something significant or about the type of things that were around there and that sort of thing. So that's very, very special places for us. So, and then the river flows further on downstream when you get to around Taranaki with Evans Crown, and the traditional name of Evans Crown in Wiradjuri is Gumbu, which actually means crown. So, like I said, Evans, all he did was just name it after himself. But that's a very significant place for ceremony that used to take place there from lots of different peoples that came from over the other side of the mountains, from the coast. And there are particular rock formations within Gumbu up the top that signify different shapes of animals and other sorts of things. So there's one there that's in the shape of a sperm whale, which is what you'd see along the coast. So we know that the coastal people came here to that place there. But there's also a rock up there that's in the shape of a woman's head, and that, and it's looking back out towards the west, towards Waalu. Well, we know that that's a woman's place, and so on. And the top of the crown itself is very significant in that that's where the men of high significance went up there, because there's a lot of staining on the rock of red ochre and other coloured ochres where they washed themselves under this rock shelter where the water cascaded over from three different rock pools above that shelter. So it's very significant up there with that place. And there's lots of cave shelters where they camped in them, and you can find stone flakes and those sorts of things. So they're all still laying around. And also there's a spring at the top of the Gumbu and that too, so where they got their fresh water and something. So it's a very significant place.
And so if we follow the course of the river down to the valley, what's the next sort of significant spot?
Well, there's a couple of places a bit further downstream from Gumbu, and two of those places, one is a women's birthing place, so where the women were taken to give birth to their babies and that sort of thing. And then another one just a bit further down away from there is a marriage place where some marriages took place between couples and that sort of thing, because when some of the warriors went through their law at a place like Gumbu, that's where the woman she picked out which warriors she'd like.
So that's the way it should be.
That's the way it was. So you'd have the warriors dressed up in their feathers and all sorts of things that they have on and showing off themselves to the women.
Yeah.
And the women go along and pick out which one they liked. So, so that was part of
Pity we don't still have that tradition.
No. So the men were, they were the ones who were being picked and looked at. Sort of thing. So, and the women picked them out. And so that's where that ceremony is there. So once you go a bit further down from there, you come to, a lot of people know about is Flat Rock, and that's a very, very significant place in that it's where lots of families used to gather and that sort of thing. But it was also a place because it was where the story of the platypus finished. There are formations of rock at Flat Rock that are in the shape of a platypus, the water rat, which was part of the story, and a few other sorts of things there that tell you the story of the water rat and the duck who produced the platypus, or the billadurung, as we call it in our language.
Right.
And billadurung means river digger. So billa means river, durung means digger. So river digger, that's what he is. So he shovels his nose around on the bottom of the river or the stream looking for little crustaceans to eat, that sort of thing. So that's a very significant place in that, that that's where all the families used to gather there too. So it was in everybody's place. And it's like that today, where you have lots of families going out there from Bathurst and probably come down from around the mountains and around the district there to go swimming there because it's such a peaceful and it's got that good feel about it. But it's also, like I said, it's got that, from us Wiradjuri people, it's got that cultural significance to it and that sort of thing. So it's a very, very special place.
Well, I must say, whenever my grandsons come to visit from Sydney, we often go down there and they love it.
Yeah, yes. No, it's a good place to go to.
Yeah. What happens next after the Flat Rock area?
Well, once they sort of finished there, because like I said, when they were at Goombu, they went through ceremony there and some of them continued on their journey to come into where Bathurst is today. And so that they'd walk down, following the river or the ridge lines basically, they followed, and they'd come across where the junction of the what they call the Fish River today and the Campbell River, which is the start of the Macquarie River. So when they got to that particular place there, that was a very, very significant area in that it was a ceremonial place because lots of junctions of rivers and some streams and things like that where there was ceremony used to take place. So there are some ceremonial grounds around there which are on a couple of the properties that are there today. And one of those properties is a place called Penrose. And on that place there, there's a lot of significance to that place because it's also where people who got married, they came there, and the people who came along the Campbell River, where they had their marriage up a bit further, back up towards Ben Chifley Dam, when they all came down and they met at this particular place, there was a big celebrationary place where they celebrated those marriages and that sort of stuff. But it was also a place where disputes were sorted out, where the elders listened to complaints, and they sorted those disputes out and made the law or told them what the law was and that sort of thing. But it was also where some people did get punishment who broke law before, and that's the place where they were taken to be punished for whatever they'd done wrong and that sort of thing. There's also another birthing place around near that place too, a bit further downstream from the junction of the river. Mm. So there's a lot of things that are significant to that place out there. So, well, some people call it White Rock area and that sort of thing. So it's all part of all that area there. It's all part of this complex of sites that were there that are still there today as we see them. And so it was also a place where you had some of the other different nation groups come there for ceremony too. And they'd have their own special place where they camped when they came there to do ceremony. But also, like I said, when a part of all of this was where they kept some others travel further on into where Bathurst is today, where they met up and they'd camp in certain places there. And some of the young boys who were of age to go through initiation were then passed over to the people that were running the initiations for them to go up to Wailu, Mount Panorama.
Yeah.
So that's why Wailu or Mount Panorama is very significant to Wiradjuri people because it was a place where a lot of the young boys from all parts of Wiradjuri country, so you're looking at right down to Tumbarumba, Tumut, down to Albury, to Beechworth in Victoria, Corowa, right out to Hay and Trangie, Gilgandra and those places, where all the boys and Mudgee and those places where they came to go through to meet those challenges, what they were going to be put through to become initiated, to become a man.
So once the river's gone past that area, then where does it go?
Well, it flows through the Bathurst Plains, and what you've got to remember before the English settlement of this area, that where the floodplain is, where the hockey fields and all those places are, that was all swamp. So you had a lot of migratory birds that lived there, and lots of species of turtles and frogs and all sorts of other animals that lived in those swamps and that sort of thing. So it was a very plentiful area of for food sources and those sorts of things. So you had lots of different bird life, and some of those were migratory birds that flew from the northern hemisphere down to here and that sort of thing. So when it flowed through there, flow on down through the gorge country, when you're getting down towards the bridle track, and those places there, and where it meets up with the Turon River, which was another very significant place where the different clan groups there got together. But also along the river too, what you find, there was fish traps within the river here within Bathurst, just near where the showground is today.
What were the fish traps?
They were stones. The stones were put in a certain way, so it was like a maze that the fish had to swim through. Yeah, so the fish would have to find their way through the maze, and that's so you go down there and you can pick out whatever fish you wanted then.
Yeah.
So it was really fresh fish markets.
Yes.
So that's what the fish traps are about. Ours weren't a real big complex one like you hear of one up at near Brewarrina on the river up that way there, because that one was a huge river system up there. And that was a place where many different nation groups met there too. And so there was plenty of fish for them to go and go into the traps there to go and get the fish that they needed and stuff like that too. This river was a bit smaller, and so they only made it as big as what they needed it to be, because it was about taking what you needed, not what you just wanted all the time. Yeah, so you'd made sure that you didn't overuse your resources, and you also had to remember to leave resources for people further downstream. So us up this end of the river had to make sure we looked after the river so that the water was just as good for the people further downstream from us.
We're hearing from Dinawan, one of the Wiradjuri elders here on the Bathurst Plains. We're going to have a quick break and listen to a piece of music that Dinawan has selected, and it's called Koori Rose.
Mother's lonely heart keeps reminding me of you and how I miss you, heaven knows. This hurt inside keeps telling me it's over, but I still love you, Koori Rose. In the evening we'd stroll down by the river, and as the golden moon shines brightly up above, there we'd watch the rippling waters as the river softly flows. I'd whisper words of love to Koori Rose. Well, now she's gone, it seems my world has ended. Without her, the stars no longer glow. Though they say we should part, she took part of my heart. And only God knows how I miss my Koori Rose. In the evening we'd stroll down by the river, and as the golden moon shines brightly up above, there we'd watch the rippling waters as the river softly flows. I'd whisper words of love to Koori Rose. Just remember, I still love you, Koori Rose.
Yeah, so when it goes further downstream and that, you go out past Eglinton and that, where there's a few story sites there along the river, some rocks in the river, which are part of a story site about an old fella. But it's also, that story's also connected to how the Bathurst Plains was formed.
What's that story?
It's about this old fella that had two wives and he killed them. They played a trick on him and he didn't like it. They locked him in his cave and he couldn't find his way out. And when he did, he went and found him and killed him. And he got found out, basically. And people that found out what he'd done, they called on the creator, Bayami, to capture this fella to punish him for what he'd done. And so Bayami sent down this giant boomerang, which seeked out looking for this fella. And it went chasing him all around the Bathurst Plains, which sort of opened up to a nice open woodland, which is what the Europeans seen when they came across the mountains. And the Wiradjuri managed it that way. So that was the beginning of the creation of that. So it's part of a creation story. And the boomerang eventually caught him and killed him. There's a rock in Eglinton there that represents his body. And then the boomerang crashed into the ground and formed what's called Stewart's Mount, or as in our language, it's Wubai Walu, Little Walu. So it formed that tabletop mountain there. So that's another story that's all down there.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah.
No,
so, and it keeps travelling on down, and like I said, gets into the gorge country down around the bridle track, which are, there's more fish traps there and that. So the Wiradjuri were able to get a lot of fish when they were in those sorts of areas. And it just travelled on further down out through Wellington to Dubbo, eventually to where Narromine is, and towards Warren, where basically that's the border area between Wiradjuri and the Wheelwarn people.
Right.
And so then it flows on into the Macquarie Marshes and that sort of thing. And that's where...
And that's where they pick up their stories.
That's where they pick up their stories then. And when we talked about the story of the Billadurung back at Flat Rock, well, part of the story of the Billadurung is through the Macquarie Marshes and heading upstream towards Bathurst. And that's where Flat Rock is today. So there's a lot of significance of things along the river. So once you get down to where the Wellington people and the Dubbo people or Dubbagar people are, they got their own stories then of what things are in the river there.
What do you think of the state of the river now?
It's rather sad seeing it like this, because the water is just dropping further and further in it, not just because of the rain, not much rain, but also the overuse of water, you know, which can be groundwater, not just surface water, and it's looking pretty sick. So in our culture, once you start seeing things are sick on the land and in the waters and that, that means that we are going to get sick, because that's what we depend on. We depend on the land. We depend on the water. And if it's not looked after, as I said earlier, where the Bathurst people, Wiradjuri people up here, Murray clan group was one of them, they looked after the river up this end to make sure that people down the bottom end of them got the same clean water, and the water wasn't blocked, so that everybody got enough water. With us, it was about that really management of the river for everybody, not just, and also for future generations. And sorry to say that today, we as a society, we don't look towards the future for what's going to be left for our children, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren. We live in a society that is about us now and what we want now, and that's something. And the environment is suffering badly.
Indeed, there's no doubting that one anymore. That's for sure. Now, I understand also that you had a celebration down by the river not that long ago.
Yeah, just on Sunday, the 1st of December, there was a young Aboriginal fellow a few weeks ago put a call out to Aboriginal people across Australia to do a nation dance on that particular day at the same time. So we had to start our dance off at 1 o'clock, because that was the time it was going to start on those that were on Eastern time, summertime. Queensland is at the start at 12 and so on. And Western Australian fellas had to start at 10 o'clock. So try and get us all the dance at the same time.
Mm.
And what it was all about was getting the First Nations peoples right across Australia to come together and do a healing ceremony for the mother, which is Mother Earth. because she needs healing because of the damage that's been done to her. Mm. So it's like when your own mother becomes sick, you need to go and help look after your mother and help heal her. Well, sadly, we're not really doing that. And because of Aboriginal people's close connection to land, it was something that hit all of us. And so we in Bathurst here, we did it was a bit of a last-minute type thing where we got together and held a ceremony down in the river where the Circle of Stones are, where some people might know about it there at Peace Park. And we just held our ceremony down there to do a dance to help heal the mother and put that call out and send that energy and send that all out there to the cosmos to help heal, which is because that's how we believe things, that we are part of everything and we need to send that energy to help do that healing. People need to understand that we've got to start really taking all these things serious with what's going on with our climate, because they talk about the economy and that all the time. Well, the economy is only going to get worse. As long as the environment gets worse, the economy is going to get worse. So we need to work out something that's going to fix the environment, which then will help the economy to pick back up again. But it's about ensuring that we work and live with what's around us, not try to make what's around us fit within what we want to do, because it just doesn't work that way. We are only a small parasite, basically, I could say, parasite on this planet, because the Earth doesn't really need us. You know, we really give no contribution to the Earth. We just take resources from the Earth but never give anything back. And that's something in our culture that you're taught, that once you take something, you've got to give something back. And the society we live in doesn't look at it that way. So that's what we need to do. We need to start giving something back to the environment and give up a lot of our wants and just look at our needs most of the time.
Dinawan, thank you very much for joining me today and for telling us so much about the story of the river.
Thank you. Well, Mandinguwu and Wiradjuri, which means thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steam at 45 degrees. The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has we'll be right back.
give it back.
How could we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning? How could we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning? The time has come to save this fair, to pay the rent now, to pay our share. The time has come, a fact's a fact, it belongs to them, we're gonna give it back. How can we dance when our earth is turning? How do we sleep while our beds are burning?
We're going to be joined by John Fry. John is a councillor on the Bathurst City Council, but he has lived near the Macquarie River all of his life, and it's been an important part of his childhood. And still today, he's very much involved in river restoration programs. John, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for talking to me today, Susan.
Now, tell me what it was like to grow up around the river.
Well, Susan, as soon as I could ride a push bike, me and my friends used to ride down to the river, and we'd have our fishing lines or have canoes down there, or we'd just be going swimming. So all the time after school and weekends, we were down at the river whenever we could get down there.
Would have been a very adventurous childhood.
Yeah, it was. I mean, obviously it had hazards, but our parents were fairly confident we could swim, and we were a little tribe of kids, you know, from the neighbourhood, so
yeah.
We looked after each other. No, they were great days growing up on the river, really.
So was the river clean enough to go swimming in?
Oh, look, I can remember it being pristine, yeah, in those days. We're talking 50 years ago.
Yeah.
It was very healthy, and the wildlife was prolific, you know. It was a very, very different river to the one we've got today.
What do you remember about the wildlife?
I remember water hens, ducks, and a huge range of water birds, a lot of finches and wrens, lizards, snakes. There were always reptiles there, tortoises all the way through there. We used to catch trout there all the time. There weren't any carp in those days, of course, and there were even Murray cod there. There was Murray cod in the river. So the holes were deep, very deep holes. I couldn't touch the bottom, most of them, as a kid. You know, sometimes it was a challenge to dive down to touch the bottom of the holes. So that's very different to the river we've got today.
Let's talk about how it has changed, not just in your memory, but perhaps if we just wander back a little bit further to what the literature tells us about what the river was like when it was first settled by white settlers.
Well, the explorers' journals mention when they first hit the river, they hit the Fish River first, and they call it the Fish River because it had abundant fish in it, and I assume they would have been Murray cod. Big fish, and they're saying the fish were so big they could hardly lift them out of the holes. That was on the Fish River at Taranar. So for a river to support big fish like that, they were saying that the fish were so abundant they couldn't deplete the holes by fishing day after day. So that was, I guess, the beginning of the end of the river, really, as we know it. So the river would have been incredibly productive in terms of what the Aboriginal people used to manage the fish there. And of course, we've got history of Aboriginal people managing fish, knowing which ones to harvest and when to harvest them, not to harvest them when they're breeding, not to harvest young females, but maybe young males. So you could actually harvest the population of fish without depleting them very much. But if you took them all out, the breeding fish out, and took every fish, you very quickly depleted the fish numbers. So I think the Wiradjuri were managing the fish populations very carefully, and all the other wildlife along the river. I mean, the talk about the floodplains with reeds higher than a man on a horse, and emus, swans, pelicans, you know, amazing amount of bird life on the floodplains. In those days, the floodplains were a big series of billabongs and braided channels. So the whole floodplain was the river. And in dry times, it obviously went back to the river channel we know now. But we've done everything to discourage that river breaking its banks because of damage to houses and roads and farming, you know. So we've changed the river in a radical way since 1815.
There was some industry along the river too, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, originally it started with farming, and we know the story about the potato fields and the potato that triggered a war, you know, so they were growing vegetables there, obviously. I think watermelons were the first crop ever grown on the creek, and you need a lot of water and fertility to grow watermelons, so that was an indicator of the fertility levels. Then, of course, came the sawmill, and the sawmill started milling the casuarinas. They're the big she-oaks on the river. Yeah. Some of those, I've seen stumps at least a metre across. So they were massive trees, nothing like the casuarinas we see in there now. And they could have had a 100, 200, 300-year life cycle. So, yeah, once the casuarinas were taken out, the banks would have started collapsing in and the vegetation would have changed. And then,
why would the casuarina be taken out? For wood?
For milling, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
They would have been building all the houses, and casuarina wasn't a hardwood, but it was a good structural roof timber, or making stairs and rails and things like that, so it was a handy timber. The hardwood, of course, was further up the slopes, and they would have harvested that as well and put that through the sawmill. So timbers like yellow box, which are off the floodplain a bit, they were right on the edge of the floodplain, the yellow box. Mm. So I imagine they would have been milling yellow box for hard timber for floors and piers and beams, and then the casuarina and the stringy bark, they would have milled all that for the roofs and the frames. So that really started the major decline in the river health once they started taking, because the platypus are living under the root balls. The casuarinas basically have a huge root system that stabilises the riverbanks. So after the casuarinas were removed, along with a lot of our regional creeks and rivers, the farmers started planting willows to stabilise the bank. So willows were very quick growing. They really held the bed and the bank together, which was different to the casuarinas. So the casuarinas held the bank together, and the reeds, the Phragmites reeds or the juncus and all the different types of reeds, there's dozens of different types of reeds, they would hold the bed together and form a series of sort of natural barriers. And that created the ponds. So it went pond, riffle, reed, riffle, pond, all the way down the system. So the reed, riffle, pond system was what grew all the fish.
Oh, okay.
And when there was a flood, the reeds would just flatten out. But the cattle came in and loved it. They focused on the reeds. So the cattle smashed the reeds out within decades, changed the whole function of the river, dropped the riverbed level, and then the river just became a straight channel. And so I was lucky enough 50 years ago to see the remnants of that river function. Now I've watched it change a lot more in the last 50 years.
Now you're involved in a lot of river restoration projects, aren't you?
I suppose I started in the early 1990s when Landcare just got going. I basically started Landcare groups around the regions. Out at Peel was where I've got a little farm. And so the Landcare groups, along with all the local farmers and the Shire Council, we did a hell of a lot of Landcare work in the 90s. And that basically meant fencing the rivers out, not the Macquarie, but the creeks and rivers running into the Macquarie. We basically created these river corridors and excluded the stock out of there. So what happened then was the river just bounced back and the creeks bounced back, and the casuarinas especially, and the willows and various other plants came back with a vengeance. You know, they'd been suppressed by the sheep and the cattle, and the reeds came back, you know. So the 90s was a real restoration decade of creeks and rivers. So it hasn't been a linear process. There's been a lot of ups and downs. But the Macquarie, I think, has been hammered the worst. The 1960s and 70s, council had a river clearance program, and it was really about reducing the flood risk to farms and properties and infrastructure. So In the 70s, I was a young trainee in the engineer's office at council. Even then, I questioned, because I had such a relationship with the river, I questioned what council was doing. And, of course, I was fairly quickly shut down, saying, well, you're a trainee, you don't have an opinion. But I did really question why we were having that river clearance program, because it involved quite a large excavator and various other machines in the river and a crew with chainsaws and poison. They did take out casuarinas in the early days, but then in the 70s or the 80s, they stopped taking the casuarinas out mostly. They did take some out, but then they just concentrated on taking willows and other trees out, other deciduous European trees that had found their way into the river through the stormwater and wind and, you know. Once the casuarinas were removed, it opened up the landscape for other plants to come in. So then you had blackberries and other weeds and willows. So the vegetation started to change. But I've been saying for years that while it'd be great to go back to a native river riparian zone, like a native plants, and that's the ideal, but that is purely aspirational. If someone in council or LLS or National Parks think they can get the rivers back to 1788 or 1815, they're delusional. We have a new regime. We have half our plants in Australia are now not from Australia. They're from Europe or South America or somewhere, or Africa.
Well, that's some mad gardeners.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And we had plant acclimatization societies that brought plants into Australia to establish them, and that's how we've got all these cactuses and lantana and blackberries. And, you know, they've been brought in as garden plants.
Yeah.
So we've got them. We've got to live with them. And we've got to manage the system referencing climate change. So there's a climate reality now that's another overlay on top of this, and I've become more aware of it, I guess, in the last 15, 20 years. Climate change has changed the amount of water coming down the creeks. It's changed the amount of water in the subsoil, and it's changed the amount of water vapour available to plants in that water vapour interaction and the microclimates that occur with dew and mist and fogs and things. So everything's changed. So we can't go on as though we're going to establish this wonderful, beautiful riparian zone of all native plants, although council are still putting a lot of native plants in. And I guess in the 2000s, we've had a lot of environmental trust grants that have enabled us to do things like the rehabilitation of the riparian corridor, which was a national trust grant. And
what do you mean by the riparian corridor?
A riparian just means the area along the river.
Oh, okay.
So it's generally, to me, it's a 50 or 100 metre wide corridor that runs along the river zone, which has very different plants. It has different, has a different temperature. You know, it's the lifeblood of the city. You know, it is our lifeblood. That's why we set up camp here. The explorers set up camp down the bottom of George and William, because there was fresh water. There was a crossing there for wagons and horses. There was the George Street Falls, as they called them, which was just a riffle. As I say, talking about the pond and riffle system, they'd found a riffle, you know, like a little rapid system of rocks where they could get their horses and buggies across. So there were those natural gravel drops and runs. And we've been trying to reinstate those with rocks. And we've got this mad situation where the bureaucrats, some of the state bureaucrats are telling us to take them out, and other people are saying put them back in. And now we've got an act of parliament, in New South Wales Parliament, a couple of weeks ago, that allows them to establish natural rock riffles and weirs in the Darling River from Bourke down to the Murray. So now we've got legislation enabling these rock riffles to be reinstated. So it's just this amazing seesaw of ideas and science and things, but that's the nature of it. So we battle on, you know. The river probably is better now than it was 20 years ago.
That's positive.
Yeah, I think so. I think council seems to have backed off a little bit on clearing so much vegetation. No one wants a monoculture, you know. No one wants a monoculture of whatever plant, you know, willows, blackberries, even eucalypts. We want a mixed vegetation community. And the reality is we have these weeds. We've got to manage them. We've got to manage to reduce them or suppress them and reduce the biosecurity risk. But the reality is we also have to think of these weeds as being habitat to threatened species. They're holding the bank together. They're performing a function. They're cooling the river. We had 100,000 flying foxes in the Willows in 2017. So we had a huge colony of threatened species in the Willows escaping the heat. And now we've got these flying foxes. The fruit bats are dropping out of the trees. Koalas are coming down. I noticed up in Gunnedah, they're coming down out of the eucalypts where they feed, obviously their natural habitat. They're coming down and going into these deciduous trees such as poplars or elms or willows or something because they're cooler. They have a cooler. They have to sit in these deciduous trees through the day to get past that heat period before they come back out and go up into the eucalypts.
Yeah.
So wildlife is adjusting as fast as it can to climate change. And, of course, there'll be a lot of losers. I've noticed there's a lot less platypus in the river now, and that could be to do with water levels or who knows. It could be herbicides. We use a lot of weed poison up in the catchment, and that washes down. We have stormwater problems, you know, coming in. But I think it's fair to say there's an improvement happening, but at the same time, the water quality is treading water, so to speak. It's precarious at the moment.
I noticed that there's quite a bit of planting underneath the bridge on the way into town from Kelso.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Council's very active or proactive in applying for these environmental trust grants that are available each year to councils. So council's been fairly successful in getting those probably over the last decade or so, and I was involved with that earlier on, you know, with those applications. And that enables the council to put in a range of native plants. And the idea of the native plants is obviously to re-establish the biodiversity levels.
Yeah.
So that's insects, birds, you know, even water rats and platypus, you know, and fish. But as I say, it's best not to have a scorched earth policy and just take everything out and then put the natives back in, because they'll take decades to establish. The best strategy is to look at selective gaps in the vegetation and fill those with native plants, and hope that the native plants can outcompete the introduced plants, which they do. You know, casuarina is a very aggressive,
yes,
pioneering plant, and they're a great tree, you know, and they will outcompete other weeds, such as willows and blackberries. I'm thinking the Wombool River, as it's also known, it does include the Vale Creek, you know, the Raglan, Jordan, the Charlotte's Vale, the Saltram Creek, the Hawthorne Creek. They're all those lovely little waterways that feed into the river at right angles sometimes. And the council has been doing a lot of work on those as well, with the urban waterways plan, you know, stormwater plan. So council does have a range of plans for the creeks feeding into the river. So there's opportunities there to look at the whole floodplain, not just the actual river itself, and look at the feeder creeks and look at the quality of those. So if we can fix those up, we can actually help the river health as well.
Do you feel optimistic about the health of the river?
Optimistic, guardedly, yeah. I do think we're going to have to put a lot more effort in to get it up to a reasonable standard, especially with climate change and the current water crisis or the water security issues we're having. So, yeah.
There's a lot to juggle.
I'm moderately optimistic.
Okay. John, it's been wonderful speaking with you today. Thank you very much for joining the program.
Thank you very much, Susan. Hope we can talk again.
Yes, I hope so too. We've been listening to John Fry. John is a Bathurst councillor and, as you've heard, a very keen defender of the river, and obviously from a very young age has wanted to do that. Thank you, John.
Dedicate this song to little Junior Parker. A cousin of mine is gone on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name by saying, I don't know why I love you like I do. After all the changes that you put me through, used all my money and my cigarettes. We'll be right back.
Now, to take out our program today, we're going to hear a piece that has been composed and performed by Ina Darambal Flynn and Phil McDowell, and it's called I Lay My Soul.
I lay my soul right down for you. I lay my soul, I lay my soul, I lay my soul right down for you. Brother came and picked it up. My brother came and picked it up. My brother came and picked it up. My brother, he came and picked it up. Eagle snatched it away and took it right over the stars. Shook his hands with the universe, met the future with the past. Sister, sing so sweetly as you dance the river's flow. Keep the rhythm with your body as you sing an ancient song. I lay my soul, I lay my soul, I lay my soul right down for you. I lay my soul, I lay my soul, I lay my soul.
Been listening to Cool Climate Living. I'm Susan Lacey. Now, what you may not know is that you can participate in Radio 2MCE in more ways than listening to this program. You can subscribe. For every subscription, we can deliver great community radio and you even get some freebies. Subscribers can also get involved with 2MCE's online presenters or behind-the-scenes volunteers. Subscribers help with equipment upgrades and new technology, and resources and presenter training. So if you'd like to know more about how to become a subscriber, go to our website. Thanks for joining me today. See you soon.
Can you hear the Clarence River singing out a sweet, sweet freedom song, and it beckons us to come. Yeah, it beckons us to come along. Come along. So come on, girls, we gotta jump into that river. Taunts of the white man boss, but we gotta be strong. Yeah, we got to be strong to cross
this river. From that island that now seems so small. When they answered the river, oh, when they answered the river's call. Gotta get away from it all. Away from those men who chased them on horses, flicking whips now and then, until they were forced to run and jump into that river. And they swam, hoping to be delivered when they